Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper from The Splendid Table, and we're here with our annual Thanksgiving morning call-in show, Turkey Confidential, produced by American Public Media and brought to you by Super Target. It's a special two-hour broadcast for your calls. Think of this as Thanksgiving triage. We're going to be taking your questions, swapping stories like the one from a while back, the roofer who called in and told us how you could roast a turkey in a tar bucket. Anyway, we're going to be maybe saving a few dinners, and I've got a lineup of guests to pitch in. We've got Christopher Kimball from Cooks Illustrated Magazine, Joshua Wesson, wine expert with a maverick streak, Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet, Tom Douglas, Seattle chef extraordinaire, Jane and Michael Stern, our road food duo. But most of all, we have you. Call us, 800-537-5252, or you can email us a question by going to splendidtable.org and click on the Submit a Question icon. Okay, let's see. We've got an email from Lisa Burns, Tennessee. She wants to know about her sweet potato casserole. She says, can you bake the potatoes rather than boil them? Not only, Lisa, can you bake the potatoes rather than boil them, I think they taste better. They get sweeter. You get it's just more intense potato flavor, and they're never wet and soggy. Now, the other thing is, if the potatoes are organic and you've scrubbed the skin, I'll tell you what I do. I save the skins, and on Friday, I coat them with butter, black pepper, and salt, and I run them under the broiler. But maybe you may not want to do that. It's really fattening. Anyway, yes, you can definitely bake instead of boil. Okay, we have got the man himself, Christopher Kimball. Christopher is the mind behind Cooks Illustrated magazine and the host of PBS's America's Test Kitchen. Christopher's on the line. Christopher, happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. I thought I was the face behind America's Test Kitchen.
Well, I'm the mind.
That's good.
The mind. I mean, the face is good too. Hey, speaking of the face, who did you pay off at USA Today? Christopher had, it was what, a full page story, huge photograph?
The key thing was I was right next to Sean Connery, so on the front page, so he's my hero. So that's it for me.
Is that why I thought Sean Connery was going to be appearing on America's Test Kitchen?
You know, what would I give for that? I just want that accent, you know.
Oh, that man is, well, anyway, hey, are you cooking today?
Hi, cooking today. I got up at 5. I've done pumpkin pie, pecan pie. I've done apple pie. I made a trifle.
Holy cow.
I've been
cow.
A busy boy. Yeah.
You sure? How many people are you having?
We have our family 6, and we're having 6 neighbors over, so we have a cool dozen.
So do you, I mean, I picture, for those of you who have never met Chris is really the archetype of the crusty, dry sense of humor New Englander, and I'm picturing you in an 18th century farmhouse on a hill somewhere in Vermont. Tell me this is where you live.
Well, it looks like an 18th century farmhouse, and it is on a hill. That's true, and I was actually cooking on a wood cook stove this morning, so, you know, and I am crusty, so.
All right, okay.
I think you got about a 9 out of 10 on that.
Okay, we have got a question from Kurt. Kurt is coming to us from the discussion group on Gather.com. Hey, Kurt, how can
we
help you out?
Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on. Listen, I also wanted to, while I had the opportunity real quickly, wanted to say thank you for the wonderful piece that you did last year on my friend Simone at Simone's Plain and Simple. That was just delightful.
Oh, you're from Iowa?
I am.
Simone's Plain and Simple is this great place you could go to eat a farm out in near Iowa City, out in the country. You're welcome. Hey, have you got a question?
I do. I've got this 14-pound Slow Food Heritage American Bronze sitting in front of me here. And just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the flavor profile and, you know, whether or not I bought the right bird and anything else you can tell me about it. It's
Chris,
by Henry Miller outside of Iowa City.
Okay. Hey, Chris, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's a little late to be talking about whether you bought the right bird.
I guess so.
Well, we've done taste tests, and the thing that's interesting is that many people, and these are under 35-year-olds mostly, they seem to like bland turkey without much texture. I think you made absolutely the right choice. You'll have a little more chew. The meat's going to be a little darker, and it's going to have a lot more flavor. But I know that a lot of people in our kitchen, we have about 30 cooks there, a a lot of them grew up on Butterball, and that's what they're used to. But as far as I'm concerned, it's absolutely the right thing. It's a little late to brine it if you haven't done that already. So I would use a fairly low oven.
Well, actually, I didn't brine it because I was planning on deep frying it.
Oh.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, the thing that I wonder, Chris, is the brining moistens the birds. Some of the heritage birds don't have quite the same kind of fat content as
right.
the newer style birds. But the other thing is when you brine something, are you getting that natural taste that you would, you know, this is the reason you bought the bird to begin with?
Well, my experience is we get a locally grown bird. Actually, our neighbor across the valley grows them, too. And in particular with those birds, I would brine them because they are going to be sometimes a little less fat and a little drier.
Right, right.
I know that when you deep fry them, because I've done that once, I think you do inject them, though, before you fry them, as I remember, which is similar to brining. So I believe if you look at the directions, you will be injecting it with a solution. So.
And, you know, I think even if you deep fry them without doing the injection, I think you're going to be fine. We had a bronze. And it was gorgeous about 2 years ago. The thing that was amazing to me, though, Kurt, was that it was not this big, full-breasted, you know, you didn't think it could walk across the barnyard bird because it would tip. And the meat was darker. It was delicious. It was just a little drier than usual, but that wasn't a big deal. I think you're going to love it.
Oh, good. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody out there.
Hey, you,
yeah,
too.
You too.
And say hello to Simone for us.
Will do.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You can reach us at 800-537-5252 or email a question. Go to splendidtable.org and click on the Submit a Question icon. Well, Chris, we have got Frederick calling from Ann Arbor. Frederick, what do you want to talk about?
Hi. What a treat to have you. You know,
it's Frederick, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Excuse me.
Oh, that's all right. I'm so happy to be talking to you. My question is, I'm going to butterfly my turkey, and I couldn't find instructions anywhere as to how many minutes per pound I should be cooking it.
Christopher Kimball is the master of this. You couldn't have picked a better time to call.
Yes, we butterfly it. 12 to 14-pound turkey will take just over an hour and a half, and what I suggest you do is use the top of a broiler pan. It has all those slits in it, and sit that on top of a disposable aluminum roasting pan and put all your stuffing in the pan. Put the top of the broiler pan on top, then put the turkey on top of that, and roast it in a 425 oven for about 90, 100 minutes, something like that. And then when the turkey's done, the breast should be about 165 and the dark meat 175. Uh-huh. Take it off. Take the pan top off. And put the stuffing back in the oven at the same temperature for another 10 or 15 minutes just to crisp up the top. And that way you get a lot of stuffing, and the juices from the bird will run down in the stuffing. So it's a terrific way to cook a turkey. It only takes a little over an hour and a half.
Oh, I know, it's fantastic. I did it last year, but like an idiot, I didn't write anything down.
How big is your, how many pounds is your turkey?
This year.
Is your turkey about 14 pounds? Or?
Actually, it's 18, I think.
Okay, so it might take up to 2 hours.
Yes. Oh, that's perfect. I love cooking it this way.
Hey, Frederick, how many people are you feeding?
Well, don't laugh. Four.
Hey, I'm not laughing. I'm the woman. There have been Thanksgivings when it's just been my husband and myself, and we've done an 18-pound bird because the leftovers for us are even better than the bird.
Right. And actually, my friend is always buys the turkey, and it used to be that he would buy a 22-pound turkey for, you know, three or four people, and I've been working on him to bring the weight down a little bit, because we had some huge birds.
Yeah, well, you know, but just think, with the butterflying, it's gonna cook in a flash. Hey, thanks for calling, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
So, Chris, with all the experimenting you do with turkeys with Cooks Illustrated, what are you doing with your turkey this year?
Well, I'm a traditionalist. You know, I got the beer chest.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, I mean, what? I'm not going to deep. I deep fried it once, but that was not on Thanksgiving. No, I brined it yesterday. I had a beer chest cooler. Put it down. We have a walk-in root cellar that's cool. I took it out and then I air dried it in the root cellar overnight. It's about 35 degrees down there, and I'm just going to roast it for about an hour at 425, breast side down, and flip it breast side up and finish it at 325. So it'd be about 2.5-3 hours of roasting total. About a 19-20 pound bird.
This sounds great. Okay. Hey, call us 800-537-5252 and email splendidtable.org. Go to submit a question. Click through. Oh, we have got Linda on the line from St. Paul. Hey, Linda, what do you want to talk about? Oh, we don't have Linda on the line. I think we... Ah, Linda is coming, I understand.
Here I am.
Hey, Linda.
Hi.
We thought we lost you.
No, I'm here.
Have you got a question?
Yes, I'm making my dressing, and it's a recipe I've used many times, and I always use the dried herbs. This time I decided I was going to use fresh sage.
Oh, you're going to love it.
But now I'm in the dilemma. How do I convert from 1.5 teaspoons of ground sage to how much fresh sage should I put in?
Oh, Chris, you've got this.
It's about 3-to-1. So fresh herbs, you'd use about three times.
Three times.
Use it dried, yeah.
Okay.
And you know what? You're never going to go back.
This will be definitely an improvement.
Yeah. And you know what? If you've got some leftover sage leaves,
yes,
put a little bit of olive oil in the bottom of a skillet and get it hot and drop in the sage leaves. They're going to crisp in a minute. Scoop them out with a slotted spoon, you know, salt them up and either scatter them over the potatoes or just pass them around. They're fabulous.
Oh, I'll try
that. Very Italian to me.
Yeah.
I don't know why. What?
I don't know why would I say that.
With a middle name like Rosetto, it's going to be Italian. What can I tell you? Hey, hopefully this is going to be a great change.
All right. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for calling. Take care. You can call us 800-537-5252. I'm talking to Christopher Kimball, the great mind and the great face behind Cook's Illustrated magazine. So, Chris, do you have a side dish thing? I mean, I know for me there are certain side dishes there that I have to have. Is there something for your family that's got to be?
This is the one the kids won't eat. You mean that one? Yeah, that's the Brussels sprouts. We actually grow. My wife, Adrian, loves Brussels sprouts, so do I. And so we grow our own, and they're a little small this year, but they're fine. And then we cook them. We have our own bacon, and bacon fat and Brussels sprouts and salt.
Oh, that.
I mean, there's just nothing.
Yeah, there is absolutely nothing like
that. It's not quite as good as the turkey itself, but it's a close second.
You know what I realized? I mean, you're usually on the show as our stump master in Stump the Cook, and we've never had a chance to really just talk about food.
I'm too busy telling you you didn't win.
Yes, I know, which you always seem to take great delight in.
I do.
Yeah.
But the problem is you win almost all the time.
So it's paying off of all of our listeners. You know, we've got a big budget here. Well, we've got a call coming in from Allison in Fort Collins. Allison, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I just started reading Heat. I've been looking forward to talking to you. I just started reading Heat, and unfortunately I don't have the book with me, but at the very beginning, Bill Bruford says that Mario Batali claims that anyone who puts aluminum foil on meat, and I think it was after it came out of the oven,
is an idiot,
and I have no idea why that would be.
Have you read the book, Chris?
No, I've read. There was an excerpt, I think, in The New Yorker.
Yeah.
I didn't read that.
Yeah. What do you think about this idea? Mario, in the book, Bill Buford, the author, quotes Mario Batali as saying that anyone who tents, you know, the turkey with foil, you always see that line in recipes that you take it out of the oven, you let it rest, and you tent it with foil, and is an idiot because the meat steams.
Well, I think with a 20-pound bird, you don't need to tent it, because even if you put it outside in the snow, it would still be warm after 2 hours. A lot of retained heat in a 20-pound bird.
Exactly.
So I don't think that.
How about a smaller one? How about like a 12-pound bird?
No, I think if you very loosely tent it, I think you're fine. I think if you actually pressed the foil onto it or made a package of it, he'd be right.
Yeah.
But if it's just very loosely put over the top, I don't think you're going to get any steaming.
Why would he say that, though? Why do you think he'd say that?
I have absolutely... Well, I think what he's trying to avoid with a turkey or chicken is the skin turning from crisp to soggy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's probably what he's talking about. I can't imagine with a roast beef where that would make any difference at all.
Yeah, it really was confusing to me. I don't like to think I'm an idiot.
Well, I mean, people have strong opinions, and sometimes they don't know they're going to be quoted.
Well, my mother always had a family motto for our family, which I've adhered to throughout my life, which is always wrong but never in doubt. So it served me well. It sounds like Mario Batali has the same family.
Yeah, why do I think Mario's heard the same thing? Yeah. Allison, what do you think of the book?
Oh, so far I'm enjoying it. I had read the excerpt in the New Yorker. I've read other things by him. But I've just started it. And I got to that line, it was like, whoa. I was just so curious about it. But that makes sense. Steaming, I guess, does make sense.
Yeah, we had him on the show. It was just great. I love the book. I've just thoroughly enjoyed it. It's
wild. Well, I love Mario Batali's cookbooks, too, and I love to watch him on yeah. Food TV.
He's great. He's great. Hey, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, you too. Thank you both.
You take care. So everybody's throwing the tinfoil away.
Well, another one of these things that goes by the wayside. I'm gonna put two layers of foil on mine just to be different.
Right. And then the thing that I always wonder about is the business about you cook the bird in the paper bag or you cook the bird in the plastic bag, and what you're really doing is steam bird.
Well, you know what? That's actually very good for. If you buy a spiral sliced ham.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
If you actually put that in one of those brown and serve bags and heat it up to about 110 or 120,
yeah,
that actually works.
You mean on internal temperature?
Yeah. Those things are all pre-cooked, those spiral hams.
And you're saying, what do you mean it works? You mean it gets it
hot
faster?
It'll keep it moister.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And you don't have to worry about skin or anything. So it actually, for one of those spiral hams or any kind of pre-cooked ham.
Yeah.
But heat it to 110 or 20 and put it in the bag.
Right, but for a turkey where you want crisp skin.
No,
yeah, it's weird. Although you could get it cooked and then you could crisp it. You know, that's possible. But we have got Steve calling from Ann Arbor.
Yes. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. What do you want to talk about, Steve?
Well, I'm cooking a turducken.
You are?
Yeah.
We have never in all the years we have done this show, we have never had anyone call in who was cooking a turducken.
Well, I have a wonderful butcher, and he's prepped it. I'm just a little suspicious of the timing.
Why don't you explain what it is?
Well, it's a turkey that swallowed a duck that swallowed a chicken.
Yes. And if anybody could pull it off, it would probably be swallowed the quail, but that...
It had some force meat in it, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
He's recommended I cook it for 8 hours at 300 degrees, and it's 11 and a half pounds all told with the stuffing.
You can be sure it'll be safe.
Yeah, I'm just the only thing
it
I'm wondering.
Won't be edible, but it'll be safe.
No, but
well,
this
I don't
is,
want it to be dry.
But this, you know what I'm wondering? How thick is it?
The thickness of it.
Yeah.
Well, it's boned.
Yeah. So, but I mean, see, this is what I'm thinking. Chris, tell me what your thoughts are on this. My logic is this is like cooking a solid piece of meat.
Right.
So you generally, although we always hear about roasting by the pound, you're really roasting by the density. You know, the heat has to permeate down to the center of this hunk. And if the hunk is not a very thick one, well, you might be able to do slightly higher heat, shorter period of time. But if it's really, really thick, which this sounds like it could be, then maybe you do want like 325 for, 25 minutes to the pound.
Well, I would, I have an Italian recipe for a roast pork, and it starts at a high temperature for 45 minutes. Then
right.
It goes way down. And I find thick roasts are best cooked at very low temperature. You start high just to kill off anything that might be on the outside and crisp up the outer. So I would do 450 or 425 for 45 minutes, and I would turn the oven down, assuming your oven's accurate. I would definitely use an oven thermometer down to 200 or 225, and I would finish it that way. That way you won't overcook the thing that swallowed the duck, the turkey. You won't overcook that by the time the very center is done.
Well, I also acquired one of these new high-tech thermometers that's supposed to be very accurate.
That's a thermopen?
Yeah, I think it's a Podlar, I think it's called.
Is it one of those things where you're sticking it inside of the bird?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the clock and the timer.
That's the
polder. Thermometers on the outside.
Right. Oh, the polder, yes.
It's
yes.
The polder.
Yeah,
polder,
right. This is just a special thermometer,
yeah,
guys.
This would be particularly useful here.
Yeah, you want to get the inside, the dead center of that bird to 165.
Right,
okay.
Yeah, because otherwise, this is the real problem with this, is that it's got to be cooked all the way through. But think of it, you're no longer cooking turkey. You are cooking a roast.
Okay.
And if you think of it that way, it's about a mindset to me. You just move your head over to that.
Thanks very much.
Oh, Steve, we got to hear how this turned out. Okay, leave us a message.
Okay.
Right. You can call us 800-537-5252. Email your questions, splendidtable.org. Go to submit a question. We have got an email from Ken in Zerbulon, North Carolina. He wants to know about Kalamata olives in stuffing. Are they good? What do you think?
No.
Why not?
I knew you were going to say yes.
Why not?
I don't know. Olives in my turkey stuffing? Not for me. I'm sure you could do a great stuffing with it. But
where is your Mediterranean soul?
I know. I'm not in a Mediterranean frame of mind. It's 40 degrees out and it's sleeting. I don't want olives today. I'm sure you could. It's just...
Well, there are certain people present in the studio that have put olives in their stuffing, and they have that hasn't blown up, and it's tasted just fine. Ken, the staunch traditionalist says no. The Mediterranean soul says yes. You have to decide. Okay, let's see now. Who is up next? We have got Sonny calling from Indianapolis. Hey, Sonny, what do you want to talk about?
My goose.
You're doing a goose.
I want to talk about my goose.
Love this. You're not going to do a turkey.
No, tired of turkey.
Hey, this is great.
So this is the first time for a goose.
Okay.
And whenever I need to cook an unusual bird, a grouse, a partridge, a squab, I turn to my 1980s.
Sourcing. I'm sorry, but you've got sourcing that most of us really envy.
Oh. So I turn to my 1985 version edition of the Harrod's Cookery Book.
Okay.
And it's got a couple of goose recipes in it. And neither of these recipes instruct you to stuff any part of the bird except the neck.
Hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's a reason for that. Is it? Like,
yeah.
What is it?
Well,
it must be because there's so much fat.
Yeah.
You know what I would suggest? I've done a goose a few times for Christmas. Believe it or not, I get a huge stock pot going with water and simmer it, and I stick the goose. Lynn's going to kill me for this, but I stick the goose in the water for half an hour at just barely a simmer, and I take it out and dry it off, and then I roast it. But I get a lot of the fat, that extra fat layer. Some of it goes right into the meat, which is delicious. And so it gets rid of that problem of that excessive fat, and then I just go ahead and roast it like a turkey.
Uh-huh.
I do the same thing with a duck, so you might try that.
That, you know what, I'm not going to kill you, because it's a very old method of getting rid of excess fat, and they use it in China all the time.
Yeah, it works great.
Yeah, but one of the things is that the reason for the lack of stuffing is that generally the stuffing does get so laden with fat. But I'll tell you one thing that I found with goose, I used to do a lot of them at Christmas, is roast it on a rack, pierce the skin lightly with a fork, because that'll help drain off the fat, and roast it slow. And it'll get really good and crackly. But I have always stuffed my goose with a combination of more garlic than you ever dreamed existed. I just throw heads of garlic in the food processor. I take the root off first, obviously, with apples or pears. And I don't serve that, but it just sort of, I usually leave it in the goose overnight, where it's a little late for that. But, if you roast it with something really aromatic in the center, it just adds a little bit of flavor. And I baste like crazy with red wine.
Lynn, you could probably put olives in that too, right? I mean, while you're at it.
You know, Sonny, you don't have to laugh that hard.
Yeah, well, I'm cooking from the Harrod's Cookery Book. I'm not putting olives in my goose.
Well, you don't have to be quite so disdainful. Goose have gotten to the Mediterranean. No, but I think you're both right. You don't really want to put olives in this. But at any rate, I think that might help, okay? And I think the idea of the boiling water, that's great.
Yeah, I can do that. Thanks
a
lot.
Yeah, yeah. And have a very happy goose day.
Thank you. You
take
too.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Call us 800-537-5252 or email. You can go to splendidtable.org and click on Submit a Question. We have got Mary from St. Cloud calling. Hey, Mary, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I want to talk about the fact that I have a turkey baking in my oven. I have a tofurkey sitting on the counter.
Uh-huh.
And I have two vegans sleeping in the basement.
I just wouldn't wake them up till tomorrow. And you're all set.
This sounds great. I mean, what could be more considerate?
Well, my question, though, is if I use butter instead of this non-hydrogenated Earth Balance natural buttery spread,
yes,
are they going to know?
You know what, quite frankly, whether they know or not, this is where I get really, you know, it's like the person who says, well, I know that you don't believe in blah, blah, but it won't hurt you just once. It's a belief system. And either use that or use olive oil. And no, they probably will never tell. But the other thing is that really, I think, you know, olive oil's great.
Well, I love olive oil. I do. It's just there's something about that butter kind of bubbling and turning brown in the bottom of the pan.
Oh,
I put the flour in and it smells good.
I know. But you know, maybe you want to use the other thing. But I just wouldn't use butter. I just think.
Well, you could always go with the my house rule.
Which is?
Well, it's my kitchen and my house. I get to set the rules. So
well,
I would just tell them you used a little butter, but yeah. Depends how well you know them.
Yeah, and it also depends on, you know.
So basically, it's a matter of conscience, not taste.
Yeah.
Well, no, but I wouldn't use the spread. We've actually tested them in the test.
This is what I want to know.
And that bad, Chris?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
That actually putting olive oil in. What about with mashed potatoes now?
Olive oil with mashed potatoes.
Classic Italian combination.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, Chris, I won't
salt, olive oil. Yeah, and you know what you do is you saute onion and garlic in that olive oil, and then you mash that into the potatoes.
You know what? That's a perfect solution.
Quite good, yeah.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Good.
It's not a compromise in any way at all.
Actually, that sounds excellent.
And you know what's great to finish them? Lemon.
What?
A squeeze of lemon. You will not believe how good it is.
I thought you were going to say 2 cups of heavy cream.
Yeah.
that's just the thing you finish it with.
So, but now, so you're doing the tofurkey for them,
right?
Are these your children?
Yes.
You know, there's a whole issue here though that's kind of interesting to look at. We got an email from someone who was saying somebody on the show had said something about, you know, what you said, Chris, about, you know, you're at someone's table and there's things you don't eat. Well, your job is you eat them because you're a guest. And this person sent us an email and they said, you know, I have a child who's deathly allergic to certain things. And that's just not right to say. And this is a business about, you know, health and morality. So I always figure let them do whatever they want to do, you know. And I realize having vegans in the family on Thanksgiving, there are things that one must rethink, right?
Yeah. And it's all good. I mean, having them here is the most important thing.
Well, exactly. Hey, Chris, thanks for joining us.
My
and
pleasure.
Mary, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Christopher Kimball is host of PBS's America's Test Kitchen, and we're going to take a break in a few moments. You can call us at 800-537-5252, and you can email us at splendidtable.org and go to submit a question. One thing to consider talking about those mashed potatoes, do not, under any circumstances, mash a potato in a food processor. Take it from someone who knows. You use that for wallpaper paste. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to Turkey Confidential from American Public Media.
I'm thankful because you care. I'm thankful for dreams we share. When you came along, I was born anew. That's why I'm thankful to you. Oh, I'm thankful for happy hours. I'm thankful to all the flowers that smiles up at us from underneath the dew. Darling, I'm thankful to you. You seem so far above me. Each time you said you love me, a rainbow shoots across the sky. I've made quite a catch, and though I'm not your match, I'll do my best to satisfy. Oh, thankful, baby.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with Turkey Confidential, Thanksgiving triage for cooks across the nation. Turkey Confidential is brought to you by the Muir Glen Organic Soup Collection. Gourmet recipe soups made from premium garden fresh ingredients. Now you can learn more at MuirGlen.com. Muir Glen. Organic soups created to savor. Well, our lines are open this hour. You can reach us at 800-537-5252 or send us a question by going to splendidtable.org. Now, I'm going to bet you that the biggest inspiration for what you're cooking and eating today came from a magazine. It's where we all go, right? Well, what is Thanksgiving like for the woman behind our most venerable food magazine? Well, we have got Gourmet Magazine's editor-in-chief, Ruth Reichel, on the phone. Hey, Ruth, good to have you with us. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. This is just what I need Thanksgiving morning.
Yeah, I figured you did. I figured you did. Okay, what are you cooking? I've got to know.
Well, you have to understand that we have a large house full of people here. We've got people sleeping all over the floor. People are getting up and demanding food. And so, of course, I'm cooking turkey. And I'm a big believer that you have to cook pies the day that you eat them.
I agree with you. I just don't think they work on the second day the same way.
No. And this, everything has to be great today. So, for me, Thanksgiving morning always means setting the alarm clock really early, because I don't have the world's biggest stove, and getting all of the pies out of the oven in time to get everything else in. So
what kind of pies are you doing?
I always do four different kinds of pies.
Ruth, you're a masochist!
I love making pies, and everybody wants different kinds. I mean, my husband is a big pumpkin pie guy. I myself am not that fond of pumpkin pie, but we did a really great caramel pumpkin pie in this year's Thanksgiving at the magazine. So that's in the oven, and I always make an apple pie. And I have a friend who's coming who is a major blueberry pie person. So I froze blueberries in September to make a blueberry pie for him today.
And the fourth one?
Pecan.
Well, of course, God forbid we shouldn't have pecan pie.
Right, and it's easy. I mean, that's the thing. They're all easy pies.
Well, yeah, once you got the crust, you're kind of pretty much there. But how many people are you having?
18.
Oh, a mere bagatelle.
A mere bagatelle, yes.
So are you doing recipes from the magazine?
I'm doing some recipes from the magazine and some recipes from next year's magazine.
Yes.
And, some recipes that are recipes that I've been making forever.
You had a crew trailing you. There was something on a while back on TV. You had a TV crew trailing you for what, a year and a half, because it takes you guys a year and a half to put together the Thanksgiving issue, hence you're doing recipes for next year.
Exactly, yes.
What was that like?
Really annoying. I mean, they're very nice people, but to have someone, first of all, just making you aware of how insane your whole process is. As you're testing your 40th turkey, and they're standing there beside you going, you really didn't cook 40. Well, yes, we really did, because, we really don't want anyone to wake up Thanksgiving morning and, have a mistake. We want everyone's
exactly.
Thanksgiving turkey to be perfect.
Hey, Ruth, thanks for taking time.
This has been really fun. Thank you.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. I didn't even ask you what you're eating.
We'll talk later. You take care.
Bye.
Ruth Reichel is editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine. You can call us 800-537-5252. You can go to splendidtable.org and you can click on the icon, submit a question. Okay, we have got Tricia on the line from Ann Arbor. Tricia, a question, a story?
What's that?
A question, a story?
Question. Another mashed potato question.
Okay.
My son has asked me to make mashed potatoes like grandmother makes. which, you know, it's a high bar, but I'm going to try and do it.
Yeah, right.
And I know that some varieties of potatoes are better for mashing and some for roasting.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is I have a whole bunch of potatoes from a CSA
right.
that I belong to, and I don't know which varieties they are. So I don't know.
I think you can mash anything. I'm
okay.
not kidding. No, the thing is this. Everybody says you should use a baking potato for mashing. These are the drier potatoes. They would be called Idaho's, russets. And that you shouldn't use a boiling potato, which would be things like the red skins and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
I have mashed both, and they are fabulous. And the ones that normally you'd use for boiling, they're a little waxier. They don't have as much starch, but they tend to have a nice sweet flavor.
Uh-huh.
And the ones that are drier and fluffier, they're fine, and I would use what you have.
Okay.
I think there is nothing wrong. But do you remember how Grandma did it?
Oh, well, it's actually my mother-in-law, and I know the basics of what she does.
Okay. Is it a secret we can all share?
Well, it's, you know, butter and milk and all that stuff. There's not really any secret to it.
Yeah, yeah. But
still. The last time I tried making them, I ended up with gluey potatoes.
That's
I thought I had used the wrong one.
No, well, if you use the boiling kind of potatoes, they can get kind of gluey.
Uh-huh.
The key is don't overmash and don't overmix.
Okay, because yeah. I think I might have also used a stick blender, and you just said don't.
Oh, no. That's going to do it to anything.
Problem.
Yeah, I know. I'm on your team because when I first got a food processor, I said, wow, and put in 5 pounds or whatever, some ridiculous amount of potatoes for a dinner party that I thought was, of course, the most important dinner party of my life. And you really could have put up wallpaper.
Yeah.
So bad. So just mash.
Okay.
And you can use a fork. You can use one of those mashers that has little holes in it. I mean, you can mash in a lot of different ways, but don't use anything mechanical.
Okay. And don't worry about the variety. Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. It's going to taste delicious.
Great.
And you're supporting local agriculture.
Exactly.
So you can put a halo on. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Call us 800-537-5252. We've got Steve calling from Syracuse. Steve, happy Thanksgiving. What do you want to talk about?
Thank you.
Are you on the road?
It's great to hear this, going from Syracuse through Pennsylvania to our turkey dinner.
I love this. You're going over the river and through the woods, so to speak.
That's exactly right. And the question is, when we get there, we're in charge of preparing the creamed onions. But no cornstarch.
All right. Okay. And so these are going to be the little onions in a cream sauce, right?
Right.
Now, the key to that is what's called a classic bechamel sauce, which means that, let's say you've got 2 pounds of onions, for argument's sake, right? You're going to boil the onions. They're
uh-huh.
Are you using the really little ones?
Yes, the really little ones.
I've got a neat trick for you. You can peel them regularly, you know, but the fast way to peel them, because they're a pain in the neck, is get a big pot of boiling solid water and make an X in the bottom of the onion and drop them in for 1 minute and then just pull them out with a slotted spoon and you can slip the skin right off.
Great.
Yeah, and then you want to cook them. You want to cook them at a gentle boil in that same pot until they're just tender. You don't want them mushy or falling apart.
Terrific.
And you can do that ahead because you're going to rewarm them in the sauce. Now, the sauce is going to be about...
Okay.
All right, here's...
You make it sound so simple.
It really is. The cream sauce is bechamel cream sauce of the same thing. And what it is equal amounts of butter and flour. So you might do 3 tablespoons of butter, 3 tablespoons of flour in a 4-quart
okay.
saucepan, okay? And you're going to melt that together, and you're going to stir it with a whisk so there are no lumps. And you're going to put that over medium heat. You don't want it to color.
No.
You just want it. You want to cook it a bit until it's going to be very creamy looking. And then you're going to pour into that about a cup of warmed half and half, okay?
Okay.
And a few cloves and some bay leaf.
Oh, great. Sounds delicious.
And you're going to whisk that in, and then you're going to put in a cup of milk or another cup of half and half. And you're going to whisk that in until there are no lumps, and then you're going to bring it up to a really nice simmer. And you're going to simmer it well, okay?
Okay.
Until it's nice and thick and there's no raw flour taste. And that's going to take about 5 or 6 minutes. And then you
great.
Can pull out those yeah. flavorings if you want to.
Okay.
Okay?
That is terrific.
You're going to have the best, most classic cream. Oh, salt and pepper and nutmeg. How could I forget? Salt, pepper, nutmeg.
Okay, we can do it too.
And now put down the phone and drive safely.
Okay, we'll do. And okay. Thank you. Too bad everybody can't send you a piece of what you're suggesting.
I wish they did, because I have to say we're getting really hungry here. Hey, have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks a lot.
You take care. Bye. If you're just joining us, this is the Splendid Tables special Thanksgiving call-in show, Turkey Confidential. Now, you can reach us at 800-537-5252. We have got an email from our discussion group on Gather.com. We have Judy writing in who wants to know tips for using a meat thermometer. Okay, Judy, first of all, the meat thermometer should be put in the thickest part of the bird, okay, like right toward the center of the breast, or in the thick part of the turkey thigh. And you want to put it where it can't touch a bone. And if you're using an instant reading thermometer, you know, you open the oven door, you pull out that rack, you put it in a few seconds you get a reading. And if you're going to leave it in, if it's the kind that you leave in, you just put it in one of those spaces and you leave it in. You want the breast to be at its center about 165 degrees. Okay. And ideally the thigh, it's going to probably be about 170. And then when you take the turkey out, you're going to give it a 15 minute to a half hour rest. You can just set it aside. You don't have to cover it with foil. Okay. And that's going to cook another 5 degrees and all the juices will settle and it'll be tender and juicy. Okay. Great. We have got Jane on the line from Buffalo. Jane.
Hi, Lynn.
Have you got a question?
Yes, I do. I actually had my Thanksgiving dinner yesterday, and I like to make a ton of gravy. Everybody loves gravy, and I want it for leftovers.
Right.
But it seems like when I increase the proportion, it doesn't stay thick like it's supposed to. And I had to do a last-minute second roux, which kind of, you know, throws everything into a tizzy.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if you have a reliable formula, say if I want to end up with 12 cups of gravy.
Whoa, because I do a big reduction on my pan gravy, so I never end up with a lot of gravy, but it's really intense.
Right.
All right, if you want to thicken, essentially what you're saying is I need to thicken 12 cups of liquid, right?
Yes, but yeah.
Well, you know, gravy, which is thicker than, you know, it's not water.
Right.
I would say for that, you're going to probably need, now when you say you use a roux, do you mean you actually cook together the butter and flour in a pan and you add the broth?
Yeah, I take the turkey drippings and mix that with the flour and cook it. And then if it looks like it's too dry, I'll add some butter.
Okay, this is what I think you're going to need to do. You're going to need, for 12 cups, you're probably going to need, I'm just thinking out loud here, 2 tablespoons. You're going to need a tablespoon per cup
of
flour.
That's what I've been doing, and it used to work when I did the smaller quantities. And now that I want to achieve this massive amount of gravy, when I just expand the proportion, it doesn't work.
How long are you simmering it once everything is together?
A long time, you know, and it just like last year, because I keep notes every year, I had
right.
it going for like 45 minutes and it still wasn't getting thick.
Wow.
So I don't know if it's because I'm just using the straight turkey drippings without separating out the fat first.
No. The fat, in fact, if anything, the fat emulsifies a little bit and it can even give it more body.
Yeah.
Boy. And you're using 12 tablespoons of flour, which is 3/4 cup of flour, and you're using a 1.5 sticks of butter.
No, what I did was I measured out the drippings, and I had a cup, right?
Right.
And I took a little over 1.5 cups.
Right.
And it still wasn't enough.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not understanding.
I did a cup of drippings
right.
and 1.5 cups of flour, and it still wouldn't thicken.
I think maybe something's wrong with the method then. Here's what I'd like you to do.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to take 3/4. I want you to take a nice big saucepan, like a 6-quart pan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I want you to put into it 12 tablespoons of butter, which is 1.5 sticks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you're going to melt that down over medium heat. And you're going to add 12 tablespoons of flour, which is 3/4 cup.
Right.
Okay. And you're going to cook that and you're going to whisk it. We just were talking about this.
What I did.
All right. No. But all right. You're going to have to trust me on this.
All right. Okay.
We're going to have faith on this one.
Okay.
All right. Okay. And then, Jane, what I want you to do is to add the pan drippings, because since it's just a cup, okay,
mm-hmm.
whisk that in and let it really boil.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want you to gradually add the rest of the liquid that you would use to get up to around 12 cups. And simmer that about 25 minutes.
So could it be that if my roux is too dry to start out with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Either that, or if you're cooking the roux too fast, the flour, the way the starches in the flour work, they close down. Instead
maybe
of opening
that's
up.
What I'm doing.
Yeah, that you may be doing it because we're all in a hurry.
Yeah.
You know, especially today.
Mm-hmm.
So give it medium heat, even a little lower. Better to go too low than too high.
I gotcha. Maybe that was
I think that'll do it for you.
Okay. Thanks, Lynn. Big fan.
Hey, thank you.
And have a nice holiday. I'll say happy Thanksgiving, okay?
And you too. You too. Okay, now we're going to go to more of your calls, okay? The number is 800-537-5252. But first, I want to get some help from New York City on the line. Now, we have got one of our regulars, the sommelier who saw the light, the one and only Joshua Wesson. Josh, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thanks for doing this.
Oh, anything to avoid ruining the roux.
But, you know, it's amazing, isn't it? Anything that can go wrong is going to go wrong today.
You know, it is true. This is a day that is built on calamity. And when you think about it, you know, think about in 1621 with the pilgrims. This is a celebration today in America of bounty and generosity. Back then, they didn't even have any food. I mean, a sommelier was out of business in 1621.
Well, that's true, unless you could know what to do with seawater.
I'm going to match wine to twigs and seawater.
Exactly. And not only that, but our wonderful pilgrim ancestors, from what I understand, they let the native peoples do all the cooking. So,
it was the original takeout.
Yeah, you got it. Exactly. Get your neighbors to do the work. So this is a real media day for you, right? Weren't you on television this morning?
I did CBS The Early Show this morning.
And now you're with us.
I had so much fun with Harry Smith and co. And we did something very interesting this Thanksgiving. I've been doing Thanksgivings and had a match wine and food for about 10 years with them. But this time they had a chef from a restaurant called Molivos, which is a fine Greek restaurant.
Oh, yeah,
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
And he did a Greek Thanksgiving. And I thought it was so interesting because, you know, for every table that is set, no two tables are set the same way. I mean, everyone may have a turkey. Maybe that's the maypole
around which our
Thanksgiving revolves. But there are so many different ways that Thanksgivings can be unique, either from a culinary tradition that involves some difference in culture or an ethnic tradition or just a recipe that gets handed down for no good reason at all, but there it is.
But it's ours. It's ours.
And it's ours. So, you know, every Thanksgiving table is different, and yet you've got to find some wines that work with all of them. Otherwise, if you're a sommelier on Thanksgiving and you're trying to match every dish to every wine,
You're losing your mind.
You'd be working 10 years just to feed and make people happy on one day.
So, you know, your family's Jewish, right?
It's true.
And you were raised in New Jersey. So what is the Thanksgiving dish or dishes for the Wesson family?
Well, we put the fun in dysfunctional, as you can imagine. Jewish families from northern Jersey. We put the new in neuroses.
Right.
We're Eastern European. I got a little Russian and a little Polish in me.
Mm-hmm.
And we have sweet and sour meatballs, Eastern European style, that actually, it's like channeling my grandmother having them on the table.
Oh, my.
And it's wonderful. You know, and the food does that a lot at Thanksgiving. You'll have dishes that almost represent missing loved ones and relatives. They're there in the way that they're sharing their deliciousness. If they're not there in person, they're there in the pot. And we also do noodle pudding. Every Thanksgiving. We do kugel, sweet kugel. And, of course, that adds an extra dimension to the sommelier's challenge. But I'm up to it.
What do you serve?
Well, you know, there's so many things, whether it's kugel or even, you know, sweet potatoes or cranberries. There's so many things on the Thanksgiving table that are at once savory and sweet. And there's a very easy way to handle this complex issue. And the easy way is to find a wine that is both savory and sweet.
Right.
I'm not talking about dessert wines that are full on sweet, but things that have a kiss of sweetness. And it's not so much a specific wine like a Riesling. A lot of people think of Rieslings, they think of wines that have a little bit of sweetness.
Right.
But, you know, you can get a little bit of sweetness in wines from a lot of different grapes in a lot of different places. Chenin Blancs from the Loire Valley or from South Africa. I showed a South African one on television this morning. You can get off-dry Rieslings for sure. You can find some red wines that have a kiss of sweetness. One of my favorite wines for Thanksgiving is a sparkling Shiraz. Comes from Australia.
A sparkling Shiraz.
Yeah,
a lot of people know
Shiraz, the red grape, also
big
called
muscular
Shiraz.
Red, right?
And it When they make it in a sparkling style, they lighten it up. It's not as big and muscular as you might normally think a Shiraz would be. And they add a little bit of sweetness. And it's got, of course, scrubbing bubbles because it's sparkling.
Right.
Which makes it a perfect candidate for Thanksgiving foods, not just things like, you know, sweet noodle pudding or sweet and sour meatballs or sweet potatoes, but the scrubbing bubbles actually will take the load of salt and fat off the palate. And when you start thinking about it, no matter what kind of Thanksgiving table you're seated at, there's going to be a lot of fat and a lot of salt in front of you. You may not think about dishes that way, but everybody loves to cook with butter.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
And or olive oil and a ton of salt that gets in there. So when you have this massive amount of salt and fat, which is sort of hidden, you better find wines that are refreshing, wines that are lighter, wines that can cut through all this stuff and literally refresh the palate so you can have more. Because nobody has just a little bit at Thanksgiving. Everybody has too much.
That's right. You know, and this is not the time for those muscular, big Cabernet Sauvignons with the fancy names.
God, no. You know, one of the things that a lot of people, you know, don't know about wine and Thanksgiving is that they're just as there are certain things that you should look for, like light to medium body and refreshment and palate cleansing qualities, you also want to look for wines that are low in alcohol, because salt and alcohol don't really mix too well. When you have a lot of salt in a dish and high alcohol in a wine, the alcohol actually tastes even hotter. Salt exaggerates.
That is one of the most interesting things you've ever said.
And, really?
Well, I don't.
That doesn't speak too well for me.
I'm sorry. I take that back. No, but it's just one of those. You know, a light bulb just went off. I never thought about that. Hey, Josh, we have got a call from our discussion group on gather.com, and somebody who I think wants to specifically speak to you, okay. Diana, calling from Coon Rapids.
Do I owe them any money? That's the first.
Well, we're going to find Diana. Diana, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Hello. Diana, does Josh owe you money?
Well, watch your mailbox, Josh.
I'm going to enter the sommelier relocation program now.
Oh, God.
This is the last time you'll get me.
He's having plastic surgery done as we speak.
I see.
Okay. Did you have a question for Josh, though?
Well, I do. I do want to know exactly what wine is the best turkey wine. Now, I think it's very interesting what you said about the sparkling Shiraz, because I tend to prefer the reds anyway, and I was thinking, oh, gosh, I've got to have white wine with my turkey.
Well, you know, you've asked a great question, but unfortunately I'm going to have to give you a Talmudic answer, which means that you're not going to get a straight answer. You're going to get an answer with another set of questions.
Excellent.
That's what we do in New York. We answer questions with questions.
With questions, yes.
But actually, what I'll tell you is sparkling Shiraz, if you're shipwrecked on a desert island, and you can only have one bottle float up on shore for your Thanksgiving meal, let's say the cast of Lost is celebrating Thanksgiving, sparkling Shiraz absolutely is the wine you want to have float up on shore, if you can only have one.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, if you bump it up a little bit to, let's say, three wines from one, here's what I would put in on the table. I would have a sparkling Shiraz or an off-dry sparkling rosé. And it doesn't matter where it comes from. It could come from Spain or California or France. Doesn't matter. And for a white wine, I would pick something like a Chenin Blanc or a Riesling that had no oak, no wood, because wood is also, I didn't mention this before, Lynn, but just like high alcohol can be a problem with a lot of Thanksgiving foods, oak can be a problem, because when you strip fruit away, which is what happens when you have a wine with sweet food, it removes the fruit,
right?
You end up exaggerating the oak, just like salt can exaggerate alcohol. And if you have too much oak, let's say a big, fat, barrel-fermented Chardonnay, you can make it taste like a Louisville Slugger dipped in, I don't know, rubbing alcohol.
So, Diana, you're putting away all the Chardonnays now, right?
Well,
exactly.
You know, you can have Chardonnay. Chardonnay's not the problem. The wood is the problem.
The wood.
So, I recommend, if you love Chardonnays, just find unoaked Chardonnay.
Well, now, she's a red wine lover.
From New Zealand,
red,
right.
Red,
but if you
want
to skip the whites, because you don't care, you know, the heck with whites,
yeah.
Go over to reds. And find light to medium-bodied red wines that are 5 years old or less. In other words, young red wines. It can be a year or two or three old.
Okay.
And try to avoid wines that are over 13% alcohol and wines that are very tannic. And tannic wines come from really warm climates because grapes protect themselves from the sun by thickening their skin, and that's where the tannins come from. So let me give you some specific recommendations.
Okay.
And you're praying a wine shop is open today, right?
Yeah.
Well, believe me, every wine shop that's allowed to be is, because yesterday and today are the two biggest days for wine in the United States. Absolutely. Because this is the one holiday where everybody drinks. I mean,
more so than Christmas and New Year and all that. How interesting.
Huh. Yeah, but everybody drinks at Thanksgiving. You know, not everybody celebrates Christmas, and not everybody, you know, is happy about the New Year coming. Right. But Thanksgiving is just one of those things that is universal.
We need those
reds,
wine picks. Okay.
I would get a Pinot Noir from a cool climate like Oregon or New Zealand.
Okay.
Or any red wine from the Loire Valley.
Yeah.
Because it's cool there. Or I would go for young and fruity Shiraz or Shiraz blends from Australia that are quite lovely. And here's an odd one. Most people think of Malbec, which is the most famous red grape in Argentina, as being big and massive and huge. But if you spend less than $10 on a bottle of Malbec, it'll never be big and massive and huge. It'll always be light to medium-bodied and not too tannic.
It can't afford to be, right?
So here is a holiday where it pays not to pay. and if you spend $10 or less on a Malbec, I tell you, I can count on one hand, in the 20 years I've been in the wine business, the number of modestly priced Malbecs that I didn't enjoy. It's just a safe island that you can swim to. Argentina, go to the Mendoza, Argentine Malbecs. You'll find them in supermarkets. You'll find them at wine shops. They're easy to get now. 20 years ago, you couldn't find them. Now they're ubiquitous. And they are great Thanksgiving reds.
Oh, great.
One more hint for you. No matter what red wine you get, whether it's a Shiraz or a Malbec or even a Beaujolais Nouveau, put it in the refrigerator for 20 minutes to half an hour before you serve it to bring it down to room temperature before there was central heating, about 60 degrees. It'll taste so much better with your food when it's a little cool than if it's 72 degrees.
Oh, great.
You've got a gold mine here, Diana.
Yes, what great tips.
This is fabulous. Thank you. Hey, have a great Thanksgiving,
yes,
Diana.
And happy Thanksgiving to you and to Josh, too.
And to you and to yours. And I think everybody's going to drink really well at your house.
Here's looking at you, kid.
Yeah, exactly. Josh, we have less than a minute, but you've got bestseller wine shops all over the country. So I think of you as having your finger on the pulse of the buying public. What are people buying? What's the big thing that they're buying for this Thanksgiving?
Naked white wine.
Naked?
Naked white wine that has not seen any oak, the inside of a barrel, or a toothpick, the closest that it's come to wood, is the cardboard box or the cork that's in it.
So you're saying no oak, white wine.
Right. Unoaked white wines are going to be the next big thing. You can call me the Nostradamus of grape juice right now, but I am telling you that is coming down the pike. And one more thing I would also say, red wines that come from regions better known for white wines, in other words, cool climate reds.
So the Loire, the Riesling, the Alsace,
Oregon,
kind of thing.
New York State, even places that you don't even think red wines come from, like Austria, or way up in the upper part of Italy or Germany. You know, these are definitely places that are coming on big time with their red wine tastes. New Zealand, I mean, just fantastic.
Great.
We're normally known for white, now they're red.
Josh, we got to take a break. Thanks so much and have a great Thanksgiving.
Have a lovely Thanksgiving, Lynn.
Josh Weston is co-creator of Bestsellers Wine Shops, and he's a regular on The Splendid Table. Now, we're going to be back in a minute for more of your calls. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to Turkey Confidential from American Public Media.
Are you going on Thanksgiving Day to those family celebrations? Passing on knowledge down through the years at the gathering of generations. Every year it's the same routine, all over. Come on over, it's Thanksgiving Day. Papa looks over at the small gathering. smiles at the children as he watches them play, and wishes his wife was still by his side. She would always cook dinner.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with Turkey Confidential, the Splendid Tables nationwide culinary call-in show. Turkey Confidential is brought to you by Muir Glen Organic Tomatoes, sun-sweetened, picked in late summer, and canned the same day to preserve their fresh, vine-ripened flavor. Recipes online at muirglen.com. Muir Glen Tomatoes, true to nature. Now, our lines are open this hour. You can call us with questions. Maybe you've never done this before. You're faced with the turkey, the relatives, the side dishes, and panic is setting in. Send up a flare. We're here. Call 800-537-5252. Maybe you've got a great story. One of my favorite ones I mentioned earlier was we had a roofer who called in to tell us how to roast a turkey in a tar bucket. You need a lot of foil. Evidently, that's the key. You can email us, splendidtable.org. Go to submit a question. 800-537-5252. I'm going to go right to the phones. We've got Daniel calling from Omaha. Daniel, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty well, I have to say. I'm getting hungrier, though.
Me too. My turkey's going pretty good. I am sending up the red flare, like you were just talking about. I don't cook turkeys. I never have before, and in fact, I rarely cook meat, but relatives are coming over in about an hour, and I'm kind of concerned with my turkey.
We're here for you.
Okay. Well, I'm using your recipe for the crisp apple.
Right, with the apples and the brining and the whole deal. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So I did that. I brined it last night, and it's actually a 22-pound turkey, so I lowered the cooking temperature a little bit because I didn't want it to burn on the outside and be
right. Now you can
wrong.
Put a little foil on the outside if it starts.
And
to
I
get
did
you.
Do that, and I slab butter on one side of the foil and put that face down on.
Oh, that's
the top.
Great! Yeah, I mean you're sort of like basting it with butter that way. That's a great idea.
Right, and I've been basting the heck out of it for the past 4 hours or so.
Right,
but I'm still kind of concerned it's going to be dry because the pan, my roasting pan, is almost filled with the liquid and. There was only about a half an inch or an inch in there when I started.
Right. Well, first of all, you can baste it with that liquid. All right. And the other thing is the brining is going to save you on this.
Okay.
Now, it is a very big turkey, I have to say. And have you taken its temperature? Do you know what temperature the internal temperature is at this
point? Yeah, it's about 160 right now.
It is.
Yes.
All right. Where was that temperature taken, in the thigh or in the breast?
In between, like, the thigh and, in the thickest part of the thigh.
Are you in the kitchen right now?
I'm not. I'm outside because my wife's listening to the radio.
because the thing I'd like you to do, are you using an instant reading thermometer, or do you just have a thermometer stuck in there?
I have a thermometer.
Sure, okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Now.
This is what you're going to do. You're going to take that meat thermometer and you're going to put it right into the thickest part of the breast. You're just going to make sure it's not touching bone.
Okay.
And when it reads 165 degrees, you're going to take the turkey out. Now, don't worry about it getting cold, all right? Because what's going to happen is all the juices are going to settle because your turkey is almost done, would you believe? And that's great. The other thing you can do, if you want, is when it gets to 165 degrees, you can turn the oven off, open the door, and let the bird sit no more than about a half hour there. All right? But the thing is, either take it out or leave it in the oven. I would take it out because then you want to use the oven to heat up stuff and that kind of thing. I think you are going to be fine. It's a little larger than sort of the max for me is usually about 20 pounds, but I think you're in good shape. And remember, it throws off liquid, but because this recipe has you brine the bird, and you brined it for what? It was an hour per pound, so it was about 22 hours, right?
It wasn't quite that long because I was
fine.
Restricted on time,
I think,
but it was 12 at least. So.
You're cool.
Okay.
You're cool. And I'm not deeply offended that you didn't follow my deathless prose exactly.
Well, I think I actually made it a little better.
You see? You know, they never cook a turkey, and now they're an expert. I love this.
More garlic and apple cider instead of water.
I think that could not be a bad thing. This could not be a bad thing at all. I think, you know, the more flavoring you throw into those brines, the better, because as you're going to see, boy, you have to have a ton of flavoring in a brine for it to show up actually in the meat. I think you're home free, and I think it's going to be great, but let it rest, because this is where all the juices come together. They kind of collect, the turkey kind of, you know, I can't explain, it's like nestling in, you know, and it's going to be fabulous. And if it isn't, call me tomorrow. Okay.
I'll call you anyway and let you know how it goes.
All right. Okay. Hey.
Thanks, Lynn.
Hey, Daniel, happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
I think you're a good soul and a brave one. And now you're a cooking expert.
Right.
You can reach us at 800-537-5252. In case you've just joined us, it's Turkey Confidential from the Splendid Table, our annual Thanksgiving morning call-in show. We think of it as Thanksgiving triage. We're wide open for questions, great stories. Love to hear from some of the experts. We have Sophie on the line calling from Key West. Hey, Sophie.
Hi.
I'm just thinking how wonderfully warm it is down there.
Well, you know, we just unset the table that we had inside and are setting it up outside.
So it's warmed up, right?
It's just warmed up.
Oh,
it's
this
about
is cool. 76
degrees, 77, oh. So it will be perfect.
Tell me you've got palm trees.
Yes, we do. We have
all
palm
right.
trees, banana trees, and a turkey dinner. And my question is this. It's too late for this year, but I agree 100% the pies have got to be made the day of. The turkey, of course.
Right.
But what are your recommendations, and the cranberries, of course, really, for next year, for making things ahead? Like, for example, a dressing, because I don't stuff the bird.
Right.
I mean, do you ever do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Guilty?
I mean, if you try to do everything on the day,
which I do.
You know, by God, you're crawling to the table on your hands and knees.
Yeah.
Or if you've really held it together, I don't know about you, but you do get to a moment where you say, I wish they'd all go home.
Exactly.
Now.
I don't even want them to come.
Yeah, exactly. By the time you get to it, you can't have any fun.
Right.
Here's what I'll tell you basically, because I've kind of worked out some of this in my head.
Oh, good.
All right. I make my stuffing ahead, but I don't combine the bread with the seasoning. I have a stuffing that has meat in it, which I cook completely.
Okay.
The bread and the meat or the seasonings or whatever get put together just before I bake it.
Oh, okay.
Because otherwise you get some problems with nasty bacteria. I do most of my vegetables ahead. For instance, a lot of things will be steamed and then maybe warmed up later. I do my sweet potatoes ahead. And I do them, and I put them in a shallow casserole so I can slip them in the oven once the bird is out. This
oh,
is one
yeah.
of the great tricks, by the way. Anything that's in a casserole, so it's your stuffing, mashed potatoes, believe it or not, you can reheat. Your sweet potatoes, you know, maybe those roasted vegetables like the Brussels sprouts with mm-hmm. the apples and the bacon and the whatever. All of that, if you put it in shallow containers, if you think about it, it's going to heat up faster. And you can just stack them practically in the oven. You know, you put them on two racks. So what I do is I actually reheat my roasted vegetables because
mm-hmm.
I love to do things like roasted carrots. And I do roasted. I love to do wedges of apple and pear with sage and thyme and then things like Brussels sprouts and onions with that.
I want to come to your house.
I love sides. I mean, in one sense, the turkey is just the excuse.
Right.
So think anything. How can I put this? You can cook your greens ahead. If you do greens, you know, sauteed greens mm-hmm. that you wilt, those are wonderful reheated.
Now, do you have to put something special in your mashed potatoes? I know we're mashed potatoes out today, but there have been so many questions on mashed potatoes. But, I mean, is there something that you put in it so that you could make them the day ahead?
No. It's just the idea.
Do the same?
You can either rewarm them as a casserole where you daub them with butter or sour cream. and maybe I do sour cream and Parmigiano. And that way, when you put it in the oven, you get sort of golden brown, crusty little bits.
You put it on the top, or do you
integrate? Yeah, put it on the top. I've already done the mashed potatoes.
Okay.
You can do them any way you like, you know, with butter, with milk. You can do one of the things I love to do when we're really not wanting to do saturated fat is I slowly saute onions and garlic in olive oil with salt and pepper and fresh herbs. And I do that the day ahead, and that's when I mash into the potatoes.
Yeah, so you're actually doing more the day ahead than you are the day of.
And then I put them in a shallow casserole, and I may put some of that Parmesan cheese on top without the sour cream and some flakes of butter.
Okay.
And then when you roast it in the oven, the idea is that when you reheat it, you can even flip on the broiler to do it. You get that crusty brown top.
Mm.
So you can achieve that with butter. You can achieve it with sour cream and cheese. You can achieve it even with olive oil. But you can flavor your mashed potatoes any way you want.
Yeah.
Right. Now, if you want to do classic mashed potatoes that have never seen an oven, you reheat them in a bowl over boiling water. So you have a metal bowl that you sit over a saucepan of boiling water on top of the stove. It's like a double boiler.
Well, I just did my mashed potatoes. I think I'm going to redo them your way.
So good. I see them. Yeah, but you know what? The other thing is, any way you do mashed potatoes, the next day you mix them with leftover stuffing, you dip them in egg, and you roll them in breadcrumbs, and you pan fry them in little hamburger patties.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Everything tastes so good the next day. Why do we have to do everything the day of? Or why do I have to do
it? I think this entire feast is only an excuse to have leftovers.
Okay.
I really think that is the entire reason we do Thanksgiving. Hey, Sophie, thanks for a good question.
Well, thank you for a great answer.
And when we're sitting around the table, the whole gang here at the Splendid Table, by the way, is going to have a Thanksgiving. We do a communal Thanksgiving.
Oh,
when the show's
you
up.
Do.
We do.
Well, I'm going to drink a nice glass of that Pinot Noir or that Malbec that gentleman just talked about. I'm on my way to the wine store. I got all the wrong wine.
Oh.
I got to get the right wine. He's absolutely right.
Well,
we
will raise a glass to all of you sitting under the banana trees.
Okay.
Have
well,
a good
we,
one.
We're going to look forward to that.
You take care, sweetie.
Thank you. And
bye.
You. Bye-bye.
You can call us at 800-537-5252. We've got Tom Douglas. Now, Tom is a Seattle restaurateur. He's got something like 8 operations, you know, like not a lot. And he's also author. And one of his favorite books for me is Tom's Great Dinners. I also think of Tom as kind of an all-around great guy. So, Tom, now that I've totally embarrassed you, happy Thanksgiving.
Well, same to you. You make it sound like I'm Frankenstein. He's had 8 operations.
I didn't mean it that way. But you've got what, 7 or 8 restaurants, right?
I do.
And you've added something called Serious Pie.
Brand new pizzeria opened up about 10 weeks ago, and it's going great.
I thought it was going to be like a place where you'd sell that incredible banana cream pie that you do and the coconut cream.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do. There's plenty of people that are walking in and going, what?
Why the tomatoes? Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But we got a wood-fired oven, and so it's the first time I've gotten that close to the fuel, you know, other than charcoal growing at home. Or, you know, we have a grill, a wood-fired grill, but there's something about working in a wood-fired oven that is so magical as a chef. You're just close to the fire. You're managing the fire. It's really cool.
I must say one of the best vacations I had is I stayed in a farmhouse, and I worked with a wood oven. You know, all I had was wood and this big old wood-fired range.
Uh-huh.
It was a whole other world, and it was so exciting.
Yeah, and you know, it really kind of charms your talents of manipulation. And that sounds weird, but you're sitting there, you're kind of turning the pie and trying to have the right amount of flame to the right amount of overall oven temperature so that you're getting brown and black boils without overcooking the dough, and it's just fascinating.
Yeah, and boy, do you learn about control is really an illusion.
Exactly, and you know, when anyone wants to know how do you become a better barbecue or a wood oven person, it's like you really are managing the fire, and it's so important to have your temperature thermometers and things like that at your fingertips.
Hey, Tom, I should explain to everyone, Tom does a radio show in Seattle with a fellow chef, Thierry Rotereau, who has Rover's Restaurant, and the two of them are a riot. I have been on the show. They're amazing. But do you two ever do Thanksgiving together?
You know, we don't. You know, he's French, so I try not to hang out with him. Just kidding.
No,
this is a sample of what you deal with the two of them on the air. But I just would think you two behind the stoves doing Thanksgiving dinner for your families would be something that would really be worth recording.
Right. Well, it'd be fun. But, you know, one of the things about Thanksgiving for us is, you know, you can invite too many people sometimes. And it
Tell me about it.
Well, yeah, it just takes some of the fun of the day off and the cooking with your family. It takes some of the fun out of it and some of the reason why we do it, and you get too busy with a big party. So I would like to keep Thanksgiving at around 15 people or so, unless it happens to be all family where you're up in the 20s. But it really gets to be too much work, and, you know, you're supposed to have time to relax and give thanks.
Right, right. Is Thierry cooking today?
He is cooking, and generally he's cooking on Thanksgiving, and that's another reason why, because some people feel very strongly that this is my meal and I'm going to
cook
it.
Right, right.
Unfortunately for Terry this week, and I hope his family's not listening, but he's been forced to go to a brother-in-law's house who's cooking a turkey in the driveway in a deep-fat fryer, and he's not very happy about it.
The man has no sense of democracy, does
he? That's right.
Well, now, all right, enough about Terry. What are you cooking today?
Oh, boy. We are having, let's see, what are we having today? We're having a King Bolita stuffing, which is, I'm really excited about it. It's in Tom's Big Dinners, and we usually have this on Christmas Eve.
These are porcini mushrooms.
Kind of porcini mushrooms that we gathered here back in November when they were still around. And so we put them up. We sauteed them in butter and put them up, but just waiting for this day. And so I have 3 pounds of King Bolitas. And you know, Lynn, to get 3 beautiful pounds that aren't wormy and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for those of you who are not familiar with this, is the great mushroom of all time. It tastes like roast pork, and it's to get 3 pounds is like saying, I don't know, someone gave you an 18-carat absolutely perfect diamond. That's what it means to a cook.
Yeah, you know, or it's like beluga caviar, or it's like, yeah, you know, it has the same reverence in the kitchen.
I can imagine how this is going to perfume that turkey.
It is. Although I'm an outside the turkey cooker, so some of the mushroom trim is going in the cavity, but I like to keep the turkey kind of wide open so it cooks evenly.
Right, right.
And then I put the mushrooms in the stuffing, and that's going to be done in separate casseroles because I like the crunchy outside and then a creamy inside on my stuffing.
Oh, that sounds good.
And somebody on my radio show this week said that they make their stuffing in a crock pot, which accomplishes somewhat the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same idea.
Yeah, I've never tried that, but... and, you know, they were worried about having oven space, and I thought, well, that's a nice alternative.
Yeah, it really is, as long as it cooks all the way through. How would you feel about taking a few calls?
Absolutely.
Okay, we've got Ann calling from Fridley, Minnesota. Ann, you've got 2 people here who, you know, will try if you need help or if you want to share a story or whatever.
Yeah, I do need a lot of help. I have a pumpkin pie disaster on my hands.
What's wrong?
Well, I was making my pumpkin pie. I had my... my pie crust dough in the fridge, and I made my pumpkin pie filling.
Right.
And I had just rolled out my crust, and I was trying to transfer it into my glass pie plate when I dropped the pie plate.
Oh.
So I have no pie plate now, and I have no crust because it's all broken.
Yeah.
So, but I have this wonderful pie filling. It's my my mother-in-law's recipe from Vermont with real maple syrup in it.
Well, this sounds
so
great.
So we want to preserve that, but I'm not sure what I can do with it if I don't have a crust.
Well, do you feel like you want to make a new crust?
Well, the other hitch is that we're supposed to leave for my parents' house in an hour.
Oh, all right. Tom, what do you think?
Pumpkin pot au creme immediately. Turn the oven on, get a water bath going. It should take about probably, 20 to 30 minutes to set the custard.
Yep.
Okay.
So basically, your pumpkin pie filling is a custard.
Okay.
So just put them in a little buttered ramekin and make pumpkin pot au creme. They're going to be so awesome. You just put a little dollop of whipped cream on top when you serve it, maybe some candied cranberries or a cup of pomegranate seeds for garnish. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, and the thing is you just want small, heat-proof containers.
Okay.
So because and you're going to just take a shallow roasting pan or something like that, you know, something about 2-3 inches deep. Okay. Put a towel. Turn the oven on, 325, Tom?
Yeah, I think so. But, yeah, the water bath is the most important.
Yeah. And for that, you want to put a folded towel in the, this is a buffer, in the bottom of the pan. And what you want to do is outside of the oven, Tom, tell me if you think I'm going astray here. put all the little containers that you put the filling in, mm-hmm. and put them in the pan, and then what you want to do is slip that onto the oven shelf, have the shelf pulled out, and you pour in very hot water, right, Tom?
Absolutely. That's such a brilliant idea to put the towel, because those things have a tendency to slip around. You want to, while you're doing all that work, put your teapot on the stove and get your water hot. That'll save you time, because you're in a time crunch.
Sure.
Yeah, Lynn, it does actually work. It takes longer, but it does actually work if all you have is like a 9x13
or something. Yes.
Some sort of other ramekin kind of dish.
Yeah, you could do it in a shallow baking dish, too.
Okay, great.
If you don't want to fiddle with the little guys.
I do have some little ramekins, so I think I'll give that a
great.
Try.
And you know what? It will be the new tradition for the family. And then they'll all say, why did we ever have pumpkin pie? We could have had pumpkin pot de creme.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
You're saved.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Have a good one.
You too. Thank you.
You take care.
Okay,
and they're going to be done just the same way you check for a pumpkin pie to be done, just that little slip in of a toothpick or something like that. So.
And then, when it comes out clean toward the edge, you're fine. And by the time she gets to the party, the setter will have completely finished off, right?
Yep, absolutely.
God, are we brilliant.
You're my hero.
Oh, I feel the same way about you. Okay, we've got Christopher calling from St. Louis. Christopher, hi. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I have a quick question, oddly enough. I don't know if it's quick, but everyone's already hijacked all the good food to make. I know, so the good food this year. So
you poor soul. What did
I
you
know,
get?
I wanted to do my turkey. No, I'm doing the desserts, which I'm getting pushed into the role of the pâtissier with all my friends and family. But I'm doing a cranberry mousse because everyone already has pies and everything.
Right.
So I was thinking either A, doing an egg mousse, or just doing a straight cream mousse. And I know how to do the cream mousse, just whipping it up and incorporate the flavor. It's okay, but I wanted to do an egg mousse because it's nice and fancier, more fun, and more practice. And I'm just wondering if I'm just whipping up egg whites and then adding in sugar and then whatever flavor I'm going to do cranberry, when, if ever, do I incorporate back in a yolk? Because I can never find a good recipe for it.
Uh-huh.
If I have the yolk separated, when would I want to incorporate those back in?
Now, are you going to cook those yolks?
I could probably pasteurize them, but that would be making more of a custard, I thought, if I use it. Because, I've made a straight egg white, raw egg white mousse before.
Right.
But I've not done with the yolks. We have already pasteurized eggs, so I'm not too afraid
of it. Oh, then you're fine. Then you're fine.
Yeah.
Tom, what's your take?
You got to go to a baker's book. I can't tell you over the phone, if it was me, what I would do is I would make more like a creme anglaise out of the eggs.
Meaning you'd make a baked, you'd make a stirred custard.
More of a richness, like an ice cream, a nice custardy richness to your mousse. But I honestly, if I were to go about that, I would go to something like the Joy of Cooking and look up a technique for that kind of dessert and then make my adjustments from there.
Yeah, and I realize if your eggs are pasteurized, you're okay. But I would do, I think Tom has nailed it. I would do a custard base because it's going to give you stability. And, if you think something like, I'm thinking real stability here, like four yolks to maybe a cup of milk.
Uh-huh.
Or if you're going to do a cranberry mousse, if you've got sweetened cranberry juice that's really tasting good, it could be fabulous. The other thing is if you've got pomegranate juice, it would be absolutely sensational.
Oh, I left it at home, and I've always been thinking, why do people just only use it for garnish? Like, oh, look, the seeds. Like, no, I juiced my own. And
yeah,
a wonderful reduction.
But if you've got cranberry juice in the house, that would also work. Or you could do the custard base. But, Tom, then I think you can do the whipped cream, and you can do, once you've got that, you can have cooked your cranberries and work that in because they have a lot of pectin in them. That'll help gel this baby, right?
And I think so. Or if you want to go and blow the pies out of the water, which it sounds like he's a little bit competitive.
Maybe a shade. Right, Christopher?
just a bit.
You might want to use a tureen and do something like a chocolate-lined tureen and put your cranberry mousse in that.
Oh, wow.
So that
sounds
end up with this
fabulous.
Cool, I don't know. You'd have to play with it. You don't really have time today to play with it as much as that maybe, but, boy, that would be something to play for maybe next Thanksgiving to really knock their socks off.
That would be fabulous.
That sounds like fun.
It does.
A little chocolate. Wouldn't that be beautiful, Lynn, with a little chocolate?
Oh, that would be sensational.
And then the red cranberry mousse in the middle. It'd be It'd be awesome.
That could be absolutely wonderful. But I think in the meantime, what you could do is do the stiff custard, fold in cooked cranberries, fold in the cream, and then maybe what you want to do is put it in something that really looks great, you know, like a footed compote. And then if you have the time, you could do a sugar syrup in the saucepan and throw in cranberries that you would just, you know, essentially glaze in a sugar syrup with a perhaps I'm just trying to think what would set that off, set off that cranberry taste, and that could be speckled over the top.
Yeah. And, you know, if you pull those cranberries right after you do the sugar syrup and put them on something in a strainer or something like that, you can roll them in the vanilla sugar or something like that, you have
these beautiful
crusted cranberries.
That's what I was trying to come up with.
And you can do that with mint leaves. You can do that with a lot of things. You know, just take some of your mint leaves and dredge them through the cranberry syrup that you just made, and then put those in the crystallized sugar, too. And it's a beautiful garnish.
I don't know if my family's pantry is that well stocked.
Well, if it isn't that well stocked, though, I mean, you're talking sugar syrup, or you can even do the sugar syrup and just roll them in sugar and they'll look like they've been frosted.
I think just get a new family.
Or travel. Travel from now on. Pomegranate juice, you've got to have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Just stop at each house on the way and see who's got the right ingredients and then stay there.
Yes, exactly. And then go to the family afterward.
So we're thinking here for the custard, we said 4 yolks to a cup of...
I'd say for every... I'm really making it really stiff, but I want it to hold up. And then with the... You can cook the cranberries with any kind of spice. Because if you cook the cranberries and you
How are we going to cook the cranberries?
Well, I don't know, Tom. What do you think? I mean, the classic stuff is orange and all that stuff. But what I love to do, if you've got ginger and you've got cinnamon and if you've got any fresh ginger and a lot of black pepper and then sugar, I think that could really make it kind of interesting and sparkly.
And would really set off, stay different from the sugar syrup, you know, because now you've added some different stuff for your palate. It's not sticky. You got some spice there to perk things up.
Yeah, exactly. And it could be fresh ginger. It could even be powdered ginger, but you cook it in, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, what process do we want to do to cook the cranberries in? I mean, we're just going to put them in a sauce pot and
You're going to add sugar. Yeah, you're going to add sugar to taste.
Maybe a little orange juice, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. That'd be good. And then just fold those all in together. Fold the custard. If I'm doing a cream, then fold the custard with the cream, you know. And
Yeah, and what you could do is, because you're calling from St. Louis, it's probably not terribly warm there. Get that cranberry stuff cooled down. You know, just put it in a very shallow pan, stick it outside, stick it in the freezer, whatever. You want it to go in cool.
Yeah, it's about 48 out right now.
Yeah, but you know, you could even do it in the fridge real fast.
Yeah,
and you know, if it doesn't set as hard as you want it to, put it in the freezer and let it freeze up, and then. In the restaurant, we call that semifreddo. It's kind of like a custardy, like a...
Okay.
What would you call that, Lynn? It's frozen, but it's not churned.
No, it's not churned. It's called a semifreddo. But you know what? If I don't go to a break very soon, we're going to have a real problem. Christopher, we wish you good fortune, and I think you're going to have a great dessert. And Tom, would you mind sticking with us?
No, let's do it.
Okay, we'll do it.
Thank you guys very much.
Hey, you are welcome, and happy Thanksgiving.
You too, guys. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye.
We're going to be back in a moment with more of your calls. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to Turkey Confidential from American Public Media.
I've got plenty to be thankful for. I haven't got a great big yacht to sail from shore to shore. Still I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got plenty to be thankful for. No private car, no caviar, no carpet on my floor. Still I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got eyes to see with, ears to hear with, arms to hug with, lips to kiss with, someone to adore. How could anybody ask for more?
My needs are small. I buy them all at the fire.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with our annual Thanksgiving call-in show from the Splendid Table, Turkey Confidential, Thanksgiving triage for cooks across the nation. It's the show for those moments when you realize that the light of the end of the... Let's do that one more time, guys. It's the show for those moments when you realize that the light at the end of the tunnel really is the train. And it's time to swap some stories and cooking ideas. And I can't think of anybody I'd rather share all of that with than Seattle chef and cookbook author Tom Douglas. Tom, thanks for staying with us.
My pleasure. What a terrific day. And I love the idea of the show.
Well, you do this, I know, every week as well, right?
Well, my favorite thing is when I'm in the grocery store, you know, I shop, you know, it's the same stores everyone else shops
right,
at.
Right, right.
People just walk up and, you know, they don't even say hi or are you Chef Tom or anything. They just say, now, my broccoli didn't come out right the last time, and what would you do to fix that? It's like, are you talking
now
to
you
me?
Know what it's, now you know what it's like to be a physician. That's right. I've got this problem with my carrots. Well, why don't we take some more calls?
Perfect.
You can reach us, by the way, guys, 800-537-5252. We have Isabel calling from Minneapolis. Isabel, happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Hi.
Hi. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I made some popcorn balls for Thanksgiving, and
right.
I was wondering what would be some fun stuff to put in them to make them taste better.
Oh, boy. Tom?
Ooh.
What do you think about... Hey, Isabel, do you have any craisins around? You know those sweetened dried cranberries?
I think so.
Boy, they would be great in popcorn balls.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, that could work. But, Tom, any other thoughts?
Well, I'm... You know, my first thoughts... turned kind of crazy, but because popcorn balls are sweet and they're often crunchy,
right?
I think it would be really fun to surprise some people with some wasabi peas. And you take those. I know that sounds weird, but boy, can you imagine the looks on your friends and family's faces when they bit into a wasabi pea in the middle of a popcorn ball?
I don't think they'd like that too much.
That'd be like a Halloween Thanksgiving.
I think that's a hard sell, Tom. That may not work.
All the typical nuts, you know, the hazelnuts grow great in this area in the Northwest, so roasted hazelnuts would be good.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Lynn, the craisins is a great idea, but there's so many perfect dried fruits like that around right now. There's the dried blueberries, dried apricots and prunes and things like that, although Isabel doesn't sound like she's a prune girl.
No, I like apricots and the craisins, and I already have, like, marshmallow in the popcorn balls, so the craisins would go with the marshmallows.
The craisins would be great. Hey, Isabel, how old are you?
I'm 10.
And you do a lot of cooking?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, I'll make, like, breakfast sometimes, like eggs and stuff like that.
That's not easy. That's quite an accomplishment. So I think, you know, the craisins, the other thing is if you've got any dried apricots, the fruits that you really like.
Oh, yeah, I love dried apricots.
Yeah, but can you imagine, you know that tartness in a dried apricot?
Yeah.
And you have that with the marshmallow, wouldn't that be cool?
Yes.
I think that would be super.
Take a chocolate bar, too, and crunch that up and put little
chocolate
chunks.
That would be good, or like chocolate chips or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, boy. And what about butterscotch chips?
Not
as good as chocolate. It's a much harder sell than chocolate, but I think that would work too. So you could, you could do some one way and some another way, and you have a whole variety.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Okay. Hey, Isabel, thanks for calling.
Yeah.
And you have a good Thanksgiving.
You too.
Isabel, do you know my address so you could send me some popcorn balls?
No, and they'd probably melt in the mail.
Oh, okay, fine.
Our Isabel is very practical, Tom. Hey, Tom, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving to one and all.
And to everyone at your table and everybody in Seattle. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. You can call us 800-537-5252. Tom Douglas, Seattle chef, broadcaster, and one of my favorite books from Tom, Tom's Big Dinners. Call us, guys, 800-537-5252. We have got Richard on the line from Los Angeles. Hey, Richard, what do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about my turkey.
Okay.
It's brining now,
right.
And this year I'm going to try it on the barbecue for mm-hmm. the first time. And I'm following a recipe from Chris Schlesinger, which is a dry rub and then, you know, indirect heat
right.
on the grill.
Right.
And he doesn't mention anything about basting it. And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm used to doing it in the oven and basting all the time. Do you think I need to baste it in that method, or is this just a dry method?
I have a philosophy, which is that there are two ways of looking at how you roast a turkey. And one way is that you baste it with its own juices or with something that's delicious. And the other one is, no, you don't touch the bird. Now, Chris Slazinger, I don't know if Chris is a baster or a non-baster, but for my money, I'd baste that bird. And what I do is, though, because you're doing it, you're going to do it on the barbecue, right?
Yeah.
So you want a drip pan under the turkey to catch all the drippings,
right,
which, by the way, could end up making great pan gravy, right?
Exactly.
And what I would do is periodically I would baste it with a bit of wine and a dry white wine. And I like to baste. This year we're going to be making a cider Calvados gravy. And I wouldn't mind a little bit of apple cider on that baby. What are the seasonings in the rub?
I got to look it up. It's
off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head, it was, I'm trying to think, cumin and other aromatics like that.
Okay. So you're sort of going into the Indian or the North African kind of area. I would do white wine. And I do white wine, and I would do, I don't think I'd want to do the cider. The sweet piece of it may not really be, it could work, but I don't know if it would just be the perfect fit there. But I'd baste it. Absolutely, I'd baste it.
Would you start, throw some of the wine in the drip pan so that it is there warming?
No, because, you know, then you have to get to the drip pan, which gets really clumsy. I mean, if you can baste from that drip pan, it would be wonderful. If you could, you know, as the drippings develop there, I always think that if you're basting with the pan juices that the meat throws off, you're giving back its own flavor to itself and intensifying it. But that may be very clumsy to do it on your grill.
Yeah, maybe.
So what you can do is just pour about a half a cup of white wine over the bird, maybe every 30 minutes. And then the last, I'd say, 45 minutes or so of cooking, don't do that because you don't want raw wine. And then you can take, once you take the bird off the grill and let it have a rest, while it's resting, you can take that pan of drippings that you've got and you can make yourself a pan
of gravy. The best gravy of the year.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly. You've got to roast how many pounds of meat to get, three cups of the best gravy you're going to get all year. It's that business. Either you roast the turkey for the leftovers or you roast the turkey for the gravy.
I roast the turkey for the gravy.
I'm with you. I think gravy properly made is one of the great moments of life.
One of the best things my mother taught me.
Yep. So, Richard, I think that may have solved your problem.
I'll give it a shot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Take care. We have an email. Okay, Lee is emailing us. True or false? A bigger turkey has more meat proportion to bone. Yes, it does. But it takes much longer to cook, and sometimes, just because it's a more mature bird, the meat is not necessarily quite as juicy. The other thing is, and this is kind of an interesting thing to think about, instead of one 20-pound bird, if you roast two 10-pound birds, not only do they cook faster, but you get more skin. And for some of us, gravy and that crisp roasted skin are the two reasons why you roast a turkey. We have got Michelle on the line. She's calling from Iowa. Michelle, what's on your mind?
Well, my husband is a police officer, and he's working this afternoon, so we have postponed the serious cooking until the weekend, and I'm doing a little Thanksgiving lunch. And I'm looking at this package of 2 pounds of turkey cutlets, and I'm just not feeling very inspired.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, saute them in butter and
olive oil.
You know, I have turkey stock to make a nice pan gravy. But I need some help jazzing them up. And I should add, I also have a perennial herb garden that hasn't completely succumbed to the winter. So,
you know what might be wonderful to do? Why don't you make, how thick are the turkey cutlets?
They're pretty thin.
Okay, because what I was thinking is, you know, if you could manage to put a little slit in them and you could stuff them what I would do is in a food processor or mince up garlic and your choice of great fresh herbs.
Oh,
wouldn't that be delicious?
Ooh.
And then you mix that with a little bit of olive oil, and that is what you stuff into the center of the turkey. Or you could flatten them out, you know, pound them between two pieces of plastic wrap.
Sure.
And then you could make a stuffing and you could roll them up.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And you know, you could put olive oil and garlic and you could, you know, you could do even a little cheese in that stuffing and you can roll them up long way or short way. You know, either you get a big, thick roll. I would roll them up the long way, so you just get a very narrow roll, so it's almost like a oversized cigar. And then you could brown that and with some celery, carrot, and onion, maybe.
Okay.
And you can use your turkey broth and a little bit of wine. You can let it braise.
Mm.
And then you can rewarm them whenever you want to rewarm them.
That sounds wonderful.
It gives you a lot of leeway.
Okay, I'm much more excited now.
See, it's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. It's wonderful.
Hey, you have a good one.
Well, thank you. You too. We love your program.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks.
Well, we have our favorite road food duo on the line, Jane and Michael Stern. Hey, guys, happy Thanksgiving.
Lynn, hi.
Hi. What are you two doing today?
We are spending Thanksgiving with the people that we love the most in the world.
Which are?
Each other.
You're gonna, just the two of you?
Yes. We have taken ourselves out of commission for Thanksgiving because...
Out of circulation, Jane.
Out of circulation. Thank you. Michael and I are the typhoid Marys of Thanksgiving.
Why?
In our 35 years together. Truly, I can't recall a Thanksgiving that either we hosted or we went to that wasn't a disaster. So we have decided that we are going to just hole up in our house, make a teeny-weeny little turkey, and not submit other people to our Thanksgiving angst.
You know, you are the last two people in the world I would ever think that you would be able to say that. That's so, I mean, it's just amazing.
Well, you know, I've made an informal list of 35 Thanksgivings, and I'll just give you some of them.
Okay.
Our dog ate turkey grease last year. We had to go to the emergency vet. Michael's mother invited us for Thanksgiving the year the Cuisinart came out and pureed the turkey. Went to Jane's relative's house with a recovering alcoholic friend who was implored by Jane's relatives to go off the wagon.
Which he did.
Right. Went to a friend's house whose grown children stood her up at the last minute, and she
we
had a...
stared at the two empty spaces for the whole dinner.
Right. I mean, and on and on and on. So we think it's safer if we don't see anybody today and just eat a lot.
I have to empathize with you. I mean, if I had that track record, I would probably feel the same way.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's, you know, I mean, and with our families, I always think of, I'm sort of paraphrasing this, but George Burns' great quote about, I have a warm, loving, rollicking family. Thank God they live three states away.
Yes. Yes. Well, all right. So that said... you know, I think of you guys, you're wandering America, you live for Americana. I mean, are we doing sort of a reenactment of the original Pilgrim Feast here? What are you making? What?
Yes, Michael is dressed up as Squanto, and I'm making cornmeal mush.
Yes.
No, this Thanksgiving could have been painted, I mean, the dinner that we're having could have been painted by Norman Rockwell. With the exception of the bread and butter pudding that I made early in the week, we were going to have it for Thanksgiving, but we ate it all.
Bread and butter pudding? I don't think I have heard about bread and butter pudding in,
this is
I don't know,
the
what?
Most delicious recipe
well, the
in
weren't
the world.
We were going to do it, but we went to Wave Hill Bread. You know, we've spoken about that place. So
we've heard about it.
Panda Campagna. Like, it's a very sturdy bread. They had some day-old loaves that they thought people might want to use for stuffing. Jane already had the stuffing covered, so I thought I would make bread and butter pudding, the recipe for which we got from a 1930s cookbook for children, the author of which felt that what children needed most to get healthy was massive amounts of butter, cream, sugar, and eggs. And that's the point of this pudding. And
so
always
this,
it's good.
This was health food. This was health food then, right?
Well, it was, yes. And believe me, I felt very healthy after eating half the pudding in the last day and a half.
Don't you hope that someday the medical profession will return to that philosophy based on yet unknown scientific discoveries?
I absolutely know that it's true.
I pray for that every night before I go to sleep.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and if it isn't true, Lynn, I'd rather eat that stuff and live 30 years than eat wheat germ and live to 150.
Oh, Lord. So is there one dish for you guys that really is Thanksgiving?
I agree with you about turkey skin and gravy, mashed potatoes, I would add.
For me, it's the leftovers. I mean, you were saying that you could do it either for the leftovers or the gravy.
Right.
I can't wait until hot turkey sandwich time tomorrow at lunch.
Yeah, stuffing sandwiches for me.
Ooh, I never thought of that.
Yeah, you do the stuffing and you do the cranberry sauce with mayonnaise and a little teeny bit of turkey, but you don't need it.
Tomorrow we could start associating with humanity again without thinking that we're going to have like our Thanksgiving curse thrust upon them.
The cursed period is over.
Yeah, we actually have invited some people over for leftovers because I think then it's safe.
Well, the pressure's off.
Yeah. We're sort of like the Boston Red Sox of Thanksgiving,
But eventually,
yeah, maybe we'll have a decent Thanksgiving where we're not in the hospital or the emergency vet or, sitting next to people who are having emotional breakdowns. I think somebody once said that Thanksgiving was the first of the what they call the emotional Bermuda Triangle, which is Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's.
Absolutely.
And I totally agree.
Absolutely. Hey, well, we're now going to start a new holiday. It's going to be the Stearns Thanksgiving Friday. Hey, you two, thanks for talking with us.
Bye, have a good Thanksgiving.
You too. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You can hear Jane and Michael on the Splendid Table every week, and they do the road food column for Gourmet Magazine. Now, you can call us 800-537-5252 with questions, stories. By the way, speaking of this idea of the Bermuda Triangle, have you noticed something? This is the year of psyching out Thanksgiving. Between the front page of the living section of the Times today about the conflict at the Thanksgiving table, CNN had a psychiatrist on telling you how to deal with it. I mean, we all know it may not be easy, but boy, it's turning into big business. I mean, they're probably going to be Thanksgiving therapists that will teach us how to move on and put our troubles behind us, at least for the Thanksgiving day. Well, we have got Louie calling from Garden City, Kansas. Louie, what do you want to talk about?
Well, it's just my wife and I this year for Thanksgiving, and we've got a large bird, and we're not sure what to do with the leftovers. I don't want to do the leftover turkey sandwich or the leftover stuffing sandwich. We want to do something original because we've got three young kids that aren't with us right now. But they'll be back tomorrow, and I'm sure they're going to be tired of turkey this and turkey that.
Well, I don't know how original it is, but there was a dish I did when I was a kid, or at least my mother did, and it's called turkey tetrazzini, and it's turkey and pasta in cream sauce.
Ooh, that sounds good.
I mean, it's really good, and it's something kids love. And the idea is that you take any gravy you have left over and you add that to a basic bechamel sauce, a cream sauce.
Uh-huh.
Butter, flour, we've talked about it on the show earlier, but a little half and half, a little milk. You can throw in some chopped onion and garlic if you want to give it a little whatever, and you throw in the leftover pan gravy.
Oh, wow.
And then you cook pasta, and you toss that with it, and you toss chunks of the leftover turkey, and you mix Parmesan cheese in with all that, okay?
That sounds splendid.
It's fabulous, and if you want to, you can put in a casserole, a very shallow casserole, and bake it in the oven for a few minutes.
And oh, that sounds wonderful.
This is good. This is really good. What are your horrible memories?
My mother made turkey pancakes one year, and they were just absolutely atrocious.
But everybody has tried that. Your mother is in very good company. I remember once trying to make turkey waffles, and aside from, I have to tell you, what the waffle iron looked like was a nasty, ugly thing, and it was like chewing on straw.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wanted to be healthy. I did it with turkey breast. But, as I was just saying to Jane and Michael, stuffing sandwiches are not a bad thing.
And really?
No one has really appreciated the beauty of good cranberry sauce spread on a piece of really delicious, real American white bread, and then some really good stuffing over that. And you can throw some turkey on it, too. And then I put a little raw onion for a little spike. And I don't know. It's weird, but it's good. But I'd say the turkey tetrazzini is going to get you a lot of fans among the
kids. Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate that idea.
You enjoy, and, you know, remember, eating today is just an excuse for turkey tetrazzini tomorrow.
Well, thank you very much. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too, Louie.
Bye-bye.
Turkey tetrazzini, it's like going back to my suburban youth. Boy, does it bring back memories. We have Kevin calling from Los Angeles. Kevin, what do you want to talk about?
Lynn, hello. I swore off turkey a long time ago, and I've always favored cooking Italian style, and I have a cookbook here which coincidentally was written by Lynn Rosetta Casper.
Oh dear, I'm blushing.
And
yes,
I've been dying to try lamb with black olives. I love a leg of lamb.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful dish. Not because it's my book. That dish, all the dishes in that book are dishes from.
I hope to live long enough to cook them all. But my question to you,
yes,
is how do I assemble a classic 5-course Italian meal with a little bit of a Thanksgiving flair?
Right.
But it's still Italian, and the meat course is the lamb.
All I have to do is just dial back to my childhood, although we did have turkey. And if we didn't have turkey, we had capon, but we can easily fit the lamb in. Just for those of you who aren't familiar with this dish, this is a leg of lamb that is literally cooked in a deep pot. And it goes back to the days when people didn't have ovens. And we're talking about Splendid Table, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And the lamb is braised in red wine with black olives and very, very little sauce, very intense, and it's just delicious. The reason I asked is that my second book has also a leg of lamb that's roasted on a bed of onion and garlic and black olives. And that's why I wanted to make sure we were talking about the same thing. Okay. The first thing you would have, if you want to be very traditional for a holiday, is you would have homemade broth with either cappelletti or tortellini, little stuffed pastas that you would get from the very best maker you could possibly, find. And you'd want that broth to be a homemade chicken broth. But the real key to a great poultry broth, if you can't get capon, which is traditional in much of Italy, I use turkey wings. And it's a trick from an Italian chef I worked with who explained it. They're neither dark meat nor light meat and very robust and utterly delicious. So you want a really delicious homemade broth. You'd cook the pasta in it. You would have fresh grated, really good Parmigiano Reggiano cheese on the table that you sprinkle on the broth.
Indeed.
Then that's your pasta and your soup course in one. Mm. You would then have the lamb. And the lamb would be served most likely with certainly sautéed greens. So you might do a collection of chards, the dark Tuscan chard, as well as Swiss chard, which has the white stalks. But this, and you'd sauté that until it's almost melting with a bit of garlic and olive oil. And then the other thing that you would do is you would cut up boiling potatoes, slice them about, I'd say maybe no more than about a half inch thick. You could even be a bit thinner. And you toss them with olive oil and coarse salt and black pepper, okay, and slivers of onion. And then you lay them out in a shallow baking dish.
Oh, my daughter will love that.
Yeah, and you slow roast them at about 350 until they're tender. And then you flip on the broiler to get them very, very crusty on the outside. And this will reheat beautifully. So you can do that ahead. And then the other thing you want to have is either green beans or broccoli. And those would be served very simply just dressed with oil and vinegar. And they could be at room temperature. And then if you have luxury things like porcini mushrooms, you could actually do the porcini on the grill and serve those very simply again. But that I'd always do fresh basil with if I could get fresh basil.
Yes, so these are going to love you for that too.
Exactly. And then your dessert could be something like a sweet squash tart that you candy the cubes of squash and then you bake them with nuts and eggs and cream in a tart shell. And it's very, very typical of this time of year. Mm-hmm. So there is your, I'm not sure if I hit all five courses, but we're getting close.
you did just fine there.
Okay.
And plenty to keep me busy. Thank you.
We're going to keep you out of trouble for a good part of the weekend.
Oh, I'm sure.
Hey, Kevin, have a good one.
And you.
And enjoy the lamb.
I will. Bye.
Take care. 800-537-5252. Give us a call. It's Turkey Confidential. We have got Barb on the line from Minneapolis. Barb, hi. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hi, Lynn. Same to you. What a great show you have.
Well, thank you.
Your prior call had me drooling. This is an easy question, though, I'm sure, for you.
What is it?
I love to put chestnuts in my stuffing.
Yeah.
And they are difficult to shell and hull. Do you have an easy way of doing this?
Oh, boy. What I do is I make a deep X on their flat side and I roast them.
Okay.
And I roast them at about 400 degrees. I can't remember now, 45 minutes, until you can easily pierce them with a knife.
Okay.
And then I cool them down, and you can even cool them down really fast in the refrigerator.
Okay.
But the idea is that when you're doing that, that you want to let them cool down. And then because you've made this X across, you can just peel it back. It's not easy, but it's easier than most techniques.
Okay. And I will try that.
And they give you an especially sweet flavor when you do that.
They're wonderful.
I love them.
Thank you, Lynn.
You take care.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Bye-bye.
We have Tony calling from Monticello, Minnesota. Hey, Tony, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I cook my turkey in a roaster oven every year. It turns out fabulous, but the skin never turns golden brown. Have you got any tips how I can get the skin golden brown?
Yeah, you know what the problem is? The roaster oven is the very deep container, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because essentially you're almost steaming the bird.
Right.
So to either you take off the lid and you get the heat up high, but that may get very tricky.
Yeah, I've tried that before too, and that doesn't ever.
And that doesn't really work very well. You know what I think you have to do?
What?
You got to put it in the oven.
Put it in the oven?
Yeah, you got to put it in the oven. And if you really want to go fast, you can either put it in the oven at like 550 degrees,
okay,
or put it in the oven and turn on the broiler, but watch it like a hawk.
Right.
And you'll brown it on one side, you'll turn it over, you'll brown it on the other side.
Sure.
And that'll do it.
Okay, okay.
Because that roaster oven gives you a really tender, juicy.
Oh, yeah, it turns out fabulous every year.
Yeah, it's just absolutely
golden brown skin.
Exactly. So this will give you the golden brown skin, and you get the juicy bird from the roaster oven. It's the best of both worlds.
Okay.
Hey, you enjoy.
Thank you.
You take care.
Bye.
Goodbye. We have an email from Kay in Wichita, Kansas. Deep frying turkey, how do you make the gravy? Well, before you deep fry, this is what I would do. I would get some extra turkey trimmings. I'd get turkey wings, I'd get a thigh, I'd cut it up, I'd brown it, all right, in a saute pan, and then I would add some wine to it and boil it down, and I'd add broth, and I'd add celery, carrot, and onion, and I'd make a broth, and then I could thicken that. And the way you thicken it is, you can make something called a slurry, where all you want is you take a big tablespoon of flour, put it in a glass, add cold water, stir it until there are no lumps, pour it in, boil it until everything's thick and there's no raw flour taste, and you're there. So that's how you would make your fried turkey gravy. Now, we have an email from Diane in St. Louis, cooking turkey on a gas grill. Okay, Diane, you want to keep the heat medium, and you're going to need about 15 to 18 minutes per pound, and whatever you do, don't stuff it. Well, we want to thank you all for joining us this week, and happy Thanksgiving. And when you're sitting around the table giving thanks, remember this quote from Anonymous. One thing for which you should be abundantly thankful is that only you and God have all the facts about yourself. Happy Thanksgiving. Turkey Confidential is produced by American Public Media and supported by SuperTarget. Our show is produced by Sally Swift and Jennifer Russell. Our technical director is Jennifer Lubke. We have intern help from Alexis Donath. Our website is managed by Judy Graham, Jeff Harkness, with additional help from Julia Schrankler. If you need any more help, head to the website, splendidtable.org. Thanks for joining us, and have a great holiday. Be well. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper.
American Public Media.